now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change lane. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show hosted by Crave Wrestling. I am Chris Featherstone here as always on a Tuesday night. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for joining the Crave Wrestling fan base and Pancakes and Power Slams. Of course, just like always, we have Raw, SmackDown, Impact Wrestling, ROH. And this week we have a special Survivor Series edition, as well as the flavor of the week, as always. This week we'll be talking about wrestlers' notable deaths since 2007. So for the past 5 years, notable wrestler deaths. So a bit sobering, but we cover the gamut here at Pancakes and Power Slams. It's an interesting topic to talk about. So, of course, 347-884-8452 is the number to call. Of course, send your tweets to @CraveWrestling. Go on to the chat room. Of course, we have trivia every week. So the first trivia question is, who managed S.A. Rios? What manager or end up being a wrestler, which he was known as a wrestler, more notably than a manager, managed S.A. Rios? That would be the first question. And a couple of things, well, a few things to highlight. We already got that. That was a pretty, pretty easy one to start off the show. Of course, it was Lita. Thank you, chat room, for answering that. And, of course, as always, every week we have our esteemed Raw correspondent, Derek, who will be joining us towards the end of the Raw recap. So it's always good to hear from Derek, our Raw correspondent. And a few things to highlight this week on this week's news. Chris Jericho hosting a new show, landed a hosting role on Sci-Fi called Robot Combat League. So check your local listings for the new show for Chris Jericho. Cena gets an MRI on his knee today. He reported it on Twitter. But it's also there's talks and there's rumors. It's actually reported that it is the injury is actually a work. It's not an actual injury, but he's selling this injury angle because they're setting up him and Dolph Ziggler for TLC. And so allegedly they want John Cena to have some type of handicap, which I think is a bit of a slight on Dolph Ziggler. I don't know. If they want him to have a handicap, it might be indicative of him losing the match, which will give more steam to Dolph Ziggler. But if they have a handicap for John Cena and have him beat Dolph Ziggler, that would be a bit disparaging, I believe. And that would be a bit offensive, actually, I'd imagine, for Dolph Ziggler. But, I guess he got to do what he got to do. And then finally, congratulations to Teddy Long. He was inducted in the 2012 NWA Hall of Fame. NWA hasn't been much of an esteemed promotion as of late. I mean, as far as the lineage is concerned, I still like NWA. They still got some good wrestlers on there. Adam Pearce, he's been really the face of the NWA for the past 5 or 6 years, and Of course, you have Colt Cabana, who was recently champion there. So Colt Cabana is one of my favorites. And so they have some good talent that still compete to NWA, NWA territories. NWA Hollywood featured a few people that are on TNA, namely a couple of them, Joey Ryan and Austin Aries. I believe this year NWA Hollywood, the promotion left NWA, and I think it's Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, if I'm not mistaken. So those are this week's news, and we will go on to our Survivor Series. Our next question. What was the name of Man on a Mission's manager? Let's go on to Survivor Series here. Pre-show, 3MB defeated Team Cobro. I think I may mention about this before, just poor Santino and Zack Ryder. They're really relegated to lower card tag team, similar to the Usos. But I definitely don't compare them to the Usos, but I think they're similar to the Usos just because they don't win. They lose more than they win. So I've been relegated to that, unfortunately. But, you know, I guess you got to push somebody, and 3MB is the group or the team that's one of the few tag teams that are actually getting a sizable push these days. So, you know, 3MB, they've already went past their critics. Still not all the way sold on them, but I think that they're decent enough. For some odd reason, I'm starting to like their theme music a lot more and more. So it's, I guess that's a plus on my end for 3MB. Next, we got, once again, the question is who's the name of the manager for Man on a Mission? Who's the name of the manager for Man on a Mission? And then the initial match of the actual show was a bonus of the traditional 5-on-5 Survivor Series match, which I think was a great idea to have more than one traditional Survivor Series match. And also think that since we saw an 8-man between four tag teams, it was good to throw in a couple of other people for the sake of the 5-on-5 traditional match. So other than the four teams, the two heel teams, the two face teams being Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara, and then Tyson Kidd and Justin Gabriel, the two heel teams being Primetime Players and Primo and Epico. They threw in Brodus Clay for the faces and Tensai for the heels. When I saw Tensai, I was very relieved because there's been reports that Tensai was the top of the line as far as adding him on to the team, the Team Ziggler. So, you know, I don't think that was a good decision at all if they would have done that, and I was very relieved to see Tensai. But I tell you what, though, poor Brodus Clay. I mean, I really don't understand. Like, he's one of the ambassadors, so to speak, for the WWE. He does a lot of PR work for them lately, and he's definitely a Saturday Morning Slam guy, but for some reason other than Saturday Morning Slam, they're not really giving Brodus any type of love. For, I mean, they did for a number of months. I mean, he came in January and lost against the Big Show. That was like his first loss, and then kind of went downhill from there. Got squashed by Antonio Cesaro a few weeks back, and lost against him again. So, you know, I don't know what they're doing with Brodus Clay. But he's a body there right now, you know, but he's not getting pushed whatsoever. Eve defeats Caitlin Clean. Not really much to say about there other than the grave disappointment of wondering who was behind the blonde wig. The first person I thought of and actually hoped was Layla, because it would have been a really good swerve to the angle, Layla being the face, kind of being Caitlyn's friend. And, you know, I was with a few people watching the pay-per-view, and just about, I think all of us said Layla. We were thinking Layla being the person behind the wig, but, Caitlyn pulls off the wig, and it's Oksana. So that was a very big flop. And then the next day she was on Backstage Fallout, and she said something like, I'm paraphrasing very much, something like, you gotta do certain things to get further or something like that. It was just ridiculous to me. It was a very bad decision to do that. It seemed like they just threw away. It seemed like they realized that they weren't doing anything with the angle, and they just kind of threw it away. And Oksana just was a bad choice. Antonio Cesaro defeated R-Truth. The match wasn't as good as I thought it could have been. It was a bit blah to me, and it was a bit disappointing, because I like R-Truth. I'm a big R-Truth fan. I like Cesaro too, but I think they both are very capable of putting on good matches. But they didn't really do that. At Survivor Series. Then we see an AJ and Vicky segment, which I totally thought could have been on Raw, should have been on Raw. But the height of it was Tamina Snuka coming back and beating up AJ, and AJ in a Superfly Splash, and Tamina Snuka was definitely, her return was definitely a great idea, kind of bodyguarding Vicky. I think that was a good place to put her at this point in time, because she was definitely needed as far as the divas are concerned. So may see Tamina Snuka and AJ down the line, which would be a good feud. Big Show defeats Sheamus, and then the decision is reversed. Originally, Big Show pulled in Scott Armstrong into a bro kick. Referees, they tend to Scott Armstrong as well as Sheamus. Sheamus turns around. Big Show, KO punches him. Another referee pins him, and then the decision is reversed. Sheamus wins by DQ. Show argues with the ref outside the ring, and Sheamus gets upset and gives Big Show multiple chair shots and gives him a bro kick. Basically, the writing was on the wall. I wrote an article about this on Bleacher Report. Basically, the writing was on the wall as far as the reason why they were setting that up. I mean, clearly it was going to be a cheers match for TLC. So, you know, how far can you stretch the feud? I'm surprised that they actually went with this. I mean, as far as they have been, very surprising to me. But you know, they surprisingly, they put on two good matches and two straight pay-per-views. So that was definitely a good thing for them. No answer yet. Looks like that was Oscar. Oscar is indeed the correct answer. Who was the last ECW champion in the WWE? So not the actual ECW champion, although if you want to say that, you could do that as well. But who was the last ECW champion before Vince McMahon changed it to NXT? Then we get Team Ziggler versus Team Foley. Team Ziggler defeats Team Foley. Ziggler and Orton were the last two, and Orton sells a super kick. Nice super kick. I was actually very impressed at Ziggler's super kick. Maybe he can do it a little bit more. I mean, it's definitely a sellable move. He executed it really well. maybe that can even propel him to a face run, a baby face run in the future. So we'll see how that goes. I'll tell you what, though. Ziggler, Orton and Miz being the last two on the team Foley, I was actually a little bit bit intrigued at that, because I believe that they could have done a little something with that. There were two options that could have happened. Either one, we could have had what we had, Orton and Ziggler be last, and Miz pulled the ruse and say, you know, I was, you know, plotting against you all along, you know, I didn't want to be on this team, and he could have just kind of refreshed his heel run. Or Randy Orton could have cost Miz the match, RKO'd the Miz. Like, so for instance, Alberto Del Rio eliminates Randy Orton, and the Miz loses because Randy Orton pulls a swerve on the Team Foley and turns heel. So either one of them would have worked, but they just, you know, they just had Team Ziggler won, which I'm also not opposed to. It was a good way to draw some steam for Ziggler, and especially if he's going against John Cena and TLC, I think it was a, you know, I can reason with the decision to have Ziggler be the sole survivor just to build momentum up to a match against John Cena. So I can see the logic in that. Then lastly, CM Punk defeats John Cena and Ryback. The match itself is quite boring. I was just pulling for Ryback. I was just, you know, hoping. I mean, he wasn't terrible. He was a bit stiff. I've watched some, you know, I've followed him for a while when he was Skip Sheffield and when he was in OVW and when he was Ryan, you know, Reeves. So, of course, he was on Tough Enough. You know, it was a bit stiff for Ryback, and John Cena didn't help the matter. And then, you know, I was a bit suspenseful when Ryback got both CM Punk and John Cena in Shell Shocked. For a second, I was like, wow, like, is he really going to win the title? I was getting a bit pumped there, because I would imagine it only been for a month, but, you know, better than nothing. And then NXT Invasion, which actually I was a fan of. I liked the ending of Survivor Series. It was suspenseful, and it was very refreshing, and it was very shocking, unpredictable. So I really liked it. The NXT Invasion brought up Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, and Roman Reigns up from NXT. A lot of people know Dean Ambrose. He's, you know, gathered a independent following from his days in the Indies. And then Seth Rollins used to be Tyler Black in ROH, and he's currently the NXT champion. And Roman Reigns is the part of the traditional Inouye family. His dad is Sika from the Wild Samoans, and he's related to, you know, the Maya Villas and the Inouyes, The Rock, Yokozuna, the late Yokozuna, Matt Inouye, which used to be Rosie. So, you know, he's got a good look to him as well. So I like the three. It's a good choice of three. And Rollins actually was a babyface in NXT, and he was a babyface in ROH for most of his career. He kind of pulled a heel turn a little bit towards the end when, you know, people found out that he was going to the WWE, and, you know, of course, the whole "you sold out," you know, chance that people have from the indies or the, you know, lower level promotions. They used to do that all the time in ECW. Did it to Mick Foley, did it to Taz. So, yeah, it was pretty interesting to see that similar in ROH. So they did it to Nigel McGuinness in ROH as well, when he became Desmond Wolfe in TNA. So a little interesting part there. So Decent Survivor Series. Good swerve at the end. Nothing too big to make it one of the best of all time, of course, but it was a good swerve to change up what we've been seeing over the past few months. So we're actually going to get to our Raw correspondent a little early today. Before I go to the Raw analysis, let's actually bring him on. So got our Raw correspondent, Derek, on the line. And what you got for us today, sir?
Survivor Series was a bit of a snooze fest. It was okay. I saw a little bit of it. But could have been a lot better, I suppose. But the thing about CM Punk is he needs a better opponent in the WWE than John Cena. Obviously, he's beaten John Cena in the past. And what CM Punk builds himself up to be, he can't express that in the ring in his matches if he's the best and he's beaten all these people. So he's a better opponent than The Rock. That could be in the near future. I remember an announcement not too long ago that stated that The Rock might be at the Royal Rumble, so we'll see what happens. Another great opponent, I think CM Punk would be awesome, is if WWE could bring back Kurt Angle. Wouldn't that be amazing? I had a brainstorm about that not too long ago. But John Cena and AJ, good for John Cena. AJ's attractive, and I'd be all over her, too. She's a very nice-looking girl. The thing about Ryback, he's already kind of lost me. He's lost twice. He really hasn't built up that much credibility. I know NXT has come out and destroyed a lot of his opportunities, and CM Punk's got that going for him with NXT. They seem to be a shocker, kind of a bright group, mystery men. But it kind of keeps the angle going a little bit, so I'm in favor of that. I'm not a CM Punk fan, but however, that's great. Oh, yeah, and I got to let you know that the Attitude Era DVD came out today. It's a 3-disc set. I haven't gotten it yet, but that's going to be awesome. I reflect on the Attitude Era of WWE that kind of built what WWE is today. And you mentioned Chris Jericho earlier, so I just got to give a plug out to Chris Jericho. He's probably one of the coolest wrestlers. He's also a metalhead like myself, and I like Chris Jericho. And I like Crave Wrestling. Hell yeah. See ya.
Thanks a lot, Derek. That's your commentary. Good deal. Just to clarify, Rock is guaranteed to be a Royal Rumble. So we will see CM Punk and The Rock at Survivor Series, barring something different happening at TLC. I mean, I don't know. They may pull a swerve, but I don't see CM Punk leaving TLC without the title, but. Who knows? I mean, it looks like it's going to be him and Ryback. I don't see them taking the title off of CM Punk at the December pay-per-view. I think if any pay-per-view they could have done it would be this one, just so Ryback could lose at TLC. You know, I think that what would probably happen is that NXT would probably cost Ryback the match again, which would actually lose much of. I mean, it would really extinguish even more steam that's brewing for Ryback, because that would be his third pay-per-view loss in a row. And so I don't know if that would be a good idea to have Ryback lose again. I do think that the fact that he did not get pinned helped a little bit, and that it took three people to keep him down. I think that's a bit of a help, but at the same time, it doesn't really it doesn't lose momentum. For Ryback, but essentially it may, because it stalled him a bit. So I guess essentially it is losing a bit of momentum if it's stalling. So, you know, I don't know. They really, you know, if this is Vince's guy, you know, if he's the next, you know, big thing, so to speak, they need to come up with a little bit better idea, you know, for him to keep his steam. Like I said before, he's my number one pick to win the Royal Rumble. I would be a fan of it. I would like it. If he wins the Royal Rumble, I think that he should go against the World Heavyweight Champion, because the WWE Championship is pretty much a lock until at least after WrestleMania. So I would be fine with that decision. I think that would be a good deal. So as far as the next question here, Ezekiel Jackson is the correct answer for the last ECW champion. Great question in the chat room. The question was right back, when's the Royal Rumble, but will it be too late? Very, very good question. Let's see here. We're talking 2 months here. If he loses in December, I think that if he's feuding with NXT, I think that that will take him away from the title picture for a month or so, because I thought initially that this would take him away from the title picture, but it doesn't seem like it is. It seems like he's kind of going to be in two different feuds. But, you know, I think that Ryback, I don't think that he'll stay in there for long. I think that, if anything, he'll go on a Royal Rumble probably 26th or so, within the last five, I'd imagine. I don't see Ryback in the Royal Rumble for a long time. In the last five, I would imagine him being probably 26th or 27th. And kind of cleaning house and probably being in there with the heel, maybe a Wade Barrett or a another heel that is on the probably a Damian Sandow. I can see Ryback and Damian Sandow being the last two, or Ryback and Wade Barrett. So remember, November 20th, 2012. That's my prediction, Royal Rumble. Last two people, either Ryback and Damian Sandow, or Ryback and Wade Barrett. So, next question. What WWE superstar was also the fake Diesel? What WWE superstar was also the fake Diesel? Let's go to Raw. Ryback promo actually wasn't too bad. I was surprised because his other promo was just kind of robotic. This one... got some boost from the crowd. I don't know. I think that, like I said, I think Vince needs to do something with Ryback because, you know, this is his project. And so he really needs to keep the steam rolling, because the thing is, someone like a Ryback, you know, if he loses steam, he loses popularity, he loses his fan base. You know, of course, he still has to Feed Me More, which goes over pretty well, but people would end up start looking at him as a joke, and I think there's skeptics that already do that. There's a lot of skeptics that are still out there, but at the same time, if you please the skeptics, you create more. So, come on, Vince, you know, do it right. So, cuts a promo. Vicky Guerrero appears and brings out Tensai, and then Ryback defeats Tensai, successfully executes Shell Shocked finisher. So, that was the big the big area of suspense for me. Can he execute successfully a Shell Shock finisher? And he did, so kudos to Ryback. Wade Barrett defeats Kofi Kingston. Kind of brings Wade Barrett down a little bit. I mean, I like Barrett. He's one of my favorites. I like Kofi Kingston. He's one of my favorites, too. I like the match between them, too. A new finishing move for his elbow called the Bullhammer, no longer the Souvenir. And I realized that finisher was just not, that finisher name was just not suitable. It just really didn't work. They had to explain it just about every time they said the finisher, which is too much. But the pull hammer, I can dig the name, but still the finisher is just a no-no for me. I don't like the finisher. I don't like how it's set up. You know, you kind of cross one arm over and kind of does a spin out type of thing, and it's just too much. It's just too much selling. It's not a world champion style move to me. It takes too much to execute. So, come on, Baird. Need to change it. The Wasteland wasn't the prettiest move, but honestly, I would rather have Wasteland than the type of elbow that he does. Now an elbow is a finisher I'm okay with. I love Chris Hero or Cassius Ohno. Chris Hero, Cassius Ohno, whatever you want to call him. I love his roaring elbow. I mean, that's really, you know, his gimmick revolves around his elbow. I like it. You know, I absolutely loved when Masato Tanaka still wrestles, but when he was wrestling primarily in the States for ECW, I loved when he did the Roaring Elbow. Had some amazing matches with Mike Awesome, who I will mention later on in the show, during the Flavor of the Week. But Masato Tanaka had some amazing matches with Mike Awesome, and his Roaring Elbow was really, really, really good. Very well executed move. Wade Barrett, you know, I'm okay with an elbow, but the way he does it, it just has to change quickly. Caitlin defeats Oksana, nothing much to say about that. Antonio Cesaro defeats Brodus Clay, nothing much to say about that either. You know, another loss for Brodus Clay, and another win for Cesaro, helping his push. R-Truth was doing commentary, so with no Little Jimmy. So I don't know if he was sick or what. You know, it's sad not to have Little Jimmy join R-Truth. Once again, the question was yes, Kane. Yes, I see that in the chat room. Yes, Kane is the WWE Superstar, was also the fake Diesel. Next question was, what former WWE Superstar was the fake Kane? What former WWE Superstar was the fake Kane? And I think I'm going to be nice enough to give the listeners a clue for this one. This person is now in TNA. So if you want to say his TNA name, I'm fine with that. If you want to say two of his WWE names, either one of them is fine. So that is the next question. Vicky interviews waitress and parking attendant. AJ appears, and then shortly Cena. Cena and AJ kiss, and then Ziggler comes out and fights Cena. You know, the saga continues. I would say the only thing that this is, I mean, the whole AJ and, the AJ and Vicky thing is just too much for me. I'm not a fan of it. But it is leading to a good build for Cena and Ziggler, and so I do like the Cena and Ziggler build. So if this is used for Cena and Ziggler, I'm fine with it, because we haven't really seen that feud be showcased the way that it is now, and for as long as both of them have been in the WWE, it's interesting to see that there wasn't a huge feud. Of course, they had a couple mini feuds and a couple good matches over the past few years, but not a huge highlighted feud similar to what they're doing now. So I'm a fan of the feud of Cena and Ziggler. Something different. I'm all about that. Orton defeats Alberto Del Rio in two out of three falls. I think that was a good match. Good chemistry between Randy Orton and Alberto Del Rio. I'm still not a Del Rio fan. I used to be. I used to be real high on Del Rio, but got a lot still to me. But he's reviving his character with the Randy Orton feud, so I can dig it. I can definitely dig it. Great Khali defeats Primo Nepico. There's your sideshow match of the evening. Particularly when Hornswoggle comes out and does the whole flower thing, the Rosa, and squirts water, and, you know, sideshow match. Miz defeats David Otunga. Otunga was the, I didn't mention Survivor Series recap. Otunga was the fifth person on Team Ziggler, and I was utterly disappointed. Like this, I've coined a description for David Otunga these days. I used to like him. Well, I couldn't stand him. His character, him as a person. You know, he does a lot of good work for the WWE, but I'm talking about his character. Couldn't stand him NXT or Nexus, none of that. Was not an Otunga fan. Started to like him more, like I mentioned before. Started to like him more during the John Laurinaitis era when he was GM and Otunga was the like his assistant slash lawyer type deal. When he came back with and was with Alberto Del Rio for a second, I was okay with that. But now he's just a jobber to the stars. And the term I've coined is he is a jacked up piece of nothing. And that's what David Otunga is these days in my book. So just making everybody else look good. So. You know, that could be a good thing and a bad thing. Chris Jericho makes everybody look good, too, but he's a shoe-in Hall of Famer. Otunga, on the other hand, not so much. Next, we get a Sheamus promo, and it calls out the Big Show. Sheamus and Show argue, and then Damian Sandow comes out for their schedule match. Sheamus defeats Damian Sandow. They fought before. It was a good match then. It was a good match now as well. Backstage segment between Vicky, AJ, and Tamina. And then another backstage segment between AJ, Dolph Ziggler, and John Cena, just kind of selling the knee angle more. AJ, good promo with Dolph Ziggler, just degrading AJ. And then John Cena kind of comes to the rescue, but Ziggler gets the upper hand in that segment, kind of spears him through a bathroom stall. Kane and Daniel Bryan defeats Mysterio and Kara. There's no contest. They compete against Mysterio and Kara, no contest. So, 347-884-8452. If anybody wants to call in live or tweet at Crave Wrestling or comment on the chat room, hang tight in the chat room. Answer some questions, some trivia questions. Trivia question now is, what former WWE superstar was the fake Kane? And if you want to make any comments about what I'm the segment I'm about to talk about, feel free to. This, to me, was by far the best and funniest segment that we experienced on Raw. Kudos. He gets a kudos. I only give so many people kudo points. But I tell you what, kudos to Titus O'Neil. I can say the primetime players as a unit, but specifically Titus O'Neil. This guy has came leaps and bounds from his NXT, his horrible NXT promos. I mean, if anybody remember those NXT promos, they were just absolutely wretched. I mean, he was getting booed. He was a baby face. He was kind of playing a baby face in NXT, and he was getting booed heavily from his promos. His promos were just horrible. But it it just seems like, I mean, he just came leaps and bounds. It seemed unscripted. I'm sure it was unscripted. There were some reports that, it was unscripted, and Vince McMahon actually liked it. And it was just hilarious. I wrote an article on Bleacher Report about it. It's basically unanimous about the opinion from the readers. So it's basically unanimous that they liked it too, along with myself. And so it was a great idea. It was a great idea. It was just O'Neill just off the cuff. It was funny. It was witty. The only thing that I would criticize about it was a little bit too many Jerry Lawler heart attack jokes. I think he started it all by saying "Have a heart, Jerry," and that was funny, but it was a little taboo. And then, it was just a snowball after that. It was just hilarious. His wash rag references was hilarious. We got a person in the chat room saying "make some noise" when he said that to Darren Young, when Darren Young was a little silent and Michael Cole was taking jabs at him. He's like, "make some noise, put your hands up." You know, it was hilarious. Titus O'Neil was the best part of Raw, in my opinion. The wash rag references was hilarious. He said it all throughout the segment when he was in the commentary booth. He said maybe that's what they say in Memphis. Then he said, he mentioned something about, I bet you say pay window as well. You know, you don't say bank, you say pay window. That was hilarious too, because I remember Dusty Rhodes and WCW Saturday Night and on Nitro, and when he was commentating, he would always say pay window, and that was hilarious to me. He's like, yeah, you know, every time he would mention someone, you know, winning the match, I'm like, yeah, he's going to go to the pay window, you know, and I thought that was absolutely hilarious. So I don't even think that reference was necessarily intended, you know, to spark that type of comparison, but it sure did. And whether if it was intended or unintended, it sparked that type of comparison, and it was just hilarious. Kudos to Titus O'Neil for that segment. Absolutely hilarious. Festus or Luke Gallows is indeed the right answer. For the former superstar was the fake Kane. Next question. Like I said, you can call in and if you want to, if you're bold enough, or mention it on the chat room or tweet at Crave Wrestling. Any three of those avenues would work as far as the answers are concerned. What deceased former WWE superstar was billed from Helsinki, Finland? What deceased former WWE superstar was billed from Helsinki, Finland? Next, we have outside of the Titus O'Neil and Darren Young commentating for the tag team match, they interfere, and then they get jumped by all four competitors of the match, which was Kane, Daniel Bryan, Sin Cara, and Rey Mysterio. So, yeah, that was a nice little end to it. And then another funny part was the backstage fallout when they interviewed primetime players. Interviewed primetime players, and Titus O'Neil, you know, was kind of shouting out different social media places, and it was pretty funny. And then he said something about MySpace. He's like, "Oh, well, probably not MySpace." So just witty stuff, you know. Vince McMahon is actually, there's reports right now that there's people backstage that are just kind of drawing, that kind of giving negative reactions because they believe that Vince McMahon, because he liked and endorsed it, he would possibly cause them to be on the mic more. If I tell you what, if Titus O'Neil is that good, witty, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with it at all. And lastly, we have the CM Punk celebration. Good top 10 poster. I like that. It was a little lackluster to me. I expected more. The video package was good. You know, of course, you know, CM Punk cuts good promos. Heyman was gold on the mic, as always. But, you know, eventually Ryback comes out and it gets jumped by NXT again and powerbombed through the table again. It was an okay finish to the Raw. Wasn't a big fan of it. There's actually reports that the viewers actually sunk. So from the previous week, so not a good sign for the ratings. Really, there's only two things that you can probably attribute that to, either one or both, and that would be CM Punk being champion is not drawing as much as Vince would like, or a three-hour Raw. And, you know, it's, of course, us wrestling fans, 3 hours is just more wrestling to see, especially on Raw, but at the same time, you know, it could be a little overkill. So, you know, we'll see if there's going to be any changes to spike up those ratings. And, of course, that you know, it's all about the ratings. And so we will go to SmackDown. Still haven't got a correct answer yet for what deceased former WWE superstar was billed from Helsinki, Finland. And give you a hint, he ended Tatanka's winning streak. WWE SmackDown, quickly, Miz TV versus with Mick Foley. Foley and Miz talk, other members appear and show dissension. Ziggler comes out and Foley says Booker gave him ability to book matches. Damian Sandow defeats Kofi Kingston. Caitlyn, Natalya, and Layla defeat Eve, Oksana, and Alicia Fox. Still, that was weird to me because Natalya has been playing the heel and Alicia Fox just kind of jumped into a heel role these days without any type of explanation. Just the Divas division alone is just so chaotic and confusing to me. Miz and Orton defeats Alberto Del Rio and Ziggler. Orton RKOs Miz after the match and gets booed. They were in Cleveland, so definitely can understand why. Kane defeats Wade Barrett by DQ. Both teams fight each other, and Miz comes out after the melee and stares down Orton. Antonio Cesaro defeats Sin Cara. R-Truth starts USA chant after match. Big Show defeats the Great Khali, showing Sheamus brawl in parking lot. Decent, you know, SmackDown to lead into Survivor Series. Still waiting for SmackDown just to have its own identity again. Still waiting for that. Impact Wrestling, James Storm promo interrupted by Bobby Roode. They fight each other and Roode coerces Storm to put up number one contender match in the main event. Interesting little stipulation to continue the feud between Storm and Roode, which is pretty interesting. Aces and Eights talk and forces Doc to relinquish the jacket. Devon throws Dart at another picture. RVD defeats Kit Cash. Jesse defeats Eric Young. Still, Eric Young, I'm a big Eric Young fan. He's actually one of my favorites in TNA. Sometimes I wonder, like, if they really, really pushed him, I wonder how over he would get, because he's over now from a comedic standpoint. And he would stay in his character. I wonder if they would just decide to put him over at all and give him a higher-level title. He's been the TV champion and he was also the X Division champion, but, you know, never been world champion, of course. So I don't know if his gimmick would ever get him that far, but, you know, I wonder if he, if it would work if he had a short reign. Joseph Park requests one more match to Hogan with Aces and Eights. Hogan rejects it. Joseph Park alludes to something Hogan said, kind of causing him to start training, which was interesting. Magnus comes out for a match against Samoa Joe, jumped it by Aces and Eights. He was the person who the dart was thrown at, I assume. Very interesting seeing how Magnus is a full-fledged heel. Either it's a face run for Magnus or just some random attack. Why they picked Magnus is a little odd to me, but we shall see as the weeks unveil. Austin Aries talked to Hardy while he gets a massage. And one of those other in the mind of Hardy segments, which I really don't get. It's just kind of weird to me why they decided to do that. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. It's weird. I guess the whole Creatures of the Night. You know, Jeff Hardy's just a weird character. I'm not an opponent of Jeff Hardy. Not really big on Jeff Hardy either, but I'm not an opponent of him. But that part of his, when we see him, we've seen it more than once. I mean, it doesn't really happen every week, but we've seen it a little frequent over the past couple of months. It's really weird to me, so I'm sure we'll see more, unfortunately. And then Kurt Angle and Garrett Bischoff defeat Aces and Eights. For some reason, I thought Garrett was going to pull, you know, make the move. But it was just a regular tag match, and they defeat Aces and Eights. Kurt Angle's, and he has Aces and Eights number, so they may be booking Kurt Angle having Aces and Eights number only for either Wes Briscoe, Garrett Bischoff, or both to turn on Kurt Angle, which I would be okay with. So if they're kind of setting it up a little bit more for the turn of Bischoff and or Briscoe, I'll be okay with that. Briscoe, he wanted to be at in the match as well, and he made reference to, you know, him not being an official person of the roster, so that type of play on words could lead him to, you know, unveil himself being a member of Aces and Eights, which I'll be okay with as well. But he did comes out. I think it was a pipe that he came out with, and he helped help the team get the victory. Next we have Mickey James wins the Knockout Battle Royal. She's been out for a few months, so good to see her back. She becomes the number one contender. Doc earns his vest back. Nice little segment there. It really seemed like he wasn't going to be a part of it anymore. I was thinking, a face turn by Doc already? I don't know about that. So it was a good little swerve they pulled there. AJ Styles promo interrupted by Daniels and Kazarian. And then Styles proposed match with Daniels, and Daniels accepts. And then Bobby Roode defeated James Storm. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how they pull that off, because Roode gets the he's now the number one contender. So, yeah, you know, a nice little cliffhanger to lead us into next week. Ludwig Borga is the correct answer for the Helsinki, Finland. He will be referenced also on the Flavor of the Week segment. Who ended Goldberg's winning streak? Now we go to any calls, 347-884-8452. Log on into the chat room. Got some answers that are trying to come up, not necessarily correct so far. Or tweet at Crave Wrestling. On to ROH, just real quick. Allison Kay defeats Mischief. Good to see. Well, I'm sorry, they go against each other, and the Mischief wins with the Desecrator. You know, Mischief is she's very known in the indies, so good to see her. And then Roderick Stone defeats Tadarius Thomas. Decent match between the two. Roderick Strong always puts together. Martini comes out and celebrates with Strong, but Strong shoves him, and Strong grabs a mic and tells Truth Martini that he quit the House of Truth, that he already quit the House of Truth. So it's interesting how they kind of. It's weird because Martini's, you know, not a popular manager, but Roderick Strong and Michael Elgin are feuding, and then Michael Elgin doesn't really vouch for Martini as well. So, you know, who's the legitimate face? Who's the legitimate heel? It's kind of mangled a little bit. And then finally. We see Adam Cole defeat Kyle O'Reilly to retain the television title. They've been used to team up with each other, and they have been feuding as of late. Kyle O'Reilly pulled a heel turn a few months ago, cut a promo to Davey Richards, who was Davey Richards, who was mentoring him, and Team Ambition, I believe their tag team name was. But you know, he was saying no more Team Ambition, and kind of made the turn. Kevin Nash is indeed the correct answer for that question. Great job. But you know, Kyle O'Reilly is kind of like a no nonsense heel now, and good match between former teammates. So. One more question before we go to the flavor of the week. Who did Chris Jericho defeat to win the ECW television title? So I'll have you all thinking for a second. Flavor of the week. We were going to that segment there. Notable deaths since 2007. Now, like I said, it's a bit sobering, of course, but, you know, we talk about everything here on Crave Wrestling. We just run the table as far as interesting topics to talk about. And of course, the flavor of the week is just a random discussion topic that we talk that I talk about, and you know, feel free to call in. Notable deaths since 2007. Now, I'll give a few mentions, and I'll go further in depth with the. A number of them. I think I have nine that I'm going to go in depth with, but the other ones, Abismo Negro, he had some TNA exposure, Tiger Mask 2, Trent Acid, really, really popular indie star, Ludwig Borga, mentioned him earlier. Larry Sweeney, another very popular indie guy. And then Awesome Kong, who was a part of the Colossal Kongs, and mostly in USWA, but has some WCW exposure as well. He recently died this week, within the week. So the nine that I'm going to mention quickly here before we close, of course, you have the... unfortunate double homicide and suicide by Chris Benoit in 2007. Dr. Death Steve Williams, he died of throat cancer in 2009. Dr. Death was definitely one of my all-time favorites. He was just loved his Oklahoma Stampede type of wrestling, very energetic guy. Definitely underrated, one of the most underrated superstars. I definitely think that he was a credible... a person to win to win a world title, specifically in the NWA or WCW, because he really didn't have a successful run in the WWE. Mike Awesome, he died in 2007 from a suicide. He was only 42 years old, I believe. Really sad. Mike Awesome, of course, he had some amazing matches with Masato Tanaka. Taz's last appearance in the ECW, he lost the world title to Mike Awesome in a triple threat between He Awesome and Masato Tanaka. And then he had a decent WCW tenure, was a part of Team Canada, which I didn't understand. But he was called the Canadian Killer when he was a part of Team Canada. So that was a bit odd to me. And then Fat Chick Thriller, that 70s guy, was just a really weird angle for him. But he was just, he had a pretty stable, pretty steady, successful career, relatively speaking, compared to many, many other wrestlers. Had some titles along the way. Bam Bam Bigelow died in 2007 from a drug overdose. Bam Bam Bigelow is just uncrowned world champion to me. He definitely would have been a credible WWE champion more towards the late 80s, early 90s. I think he could have had a decent run. Umaga, he dies of a heart attack in 2009. He was also Jamal. He was also ECMO, I believe, and that was his name in TNA. Had some gimmicks here and there, but really broke out of his shell. 3-minute warning was good, but he was a team. But he really broke out of his shell as a singles wrestler when he was Umaga and became Intercontinental Champion. Had a highlighted WrestleMania match against Bobby Lashley. So Umaga was definitely his best gimmick, hands down. Giant Gonzalez dies in 2010 of diabetes. Had an abysmal WWE run to me. I actually liked him when he was El Gigante in the WCW. I don't know what it was. He still couldn't wrestle, but, he was a baby face. I was young, and, I favored the baby faces. I liked some heels, but favored the baby faces at that point in time, early when I was young. We're talking early 90s when he was El Gigante, around 91 or so, 90, 91. We've got a caller here. State your name and where are you from?
Hi, my name's William. I'm from Butte, Montana.
All right. And how's it going?
It's going well, but I wanted to say you haven't mentioned Macho Man Randy Savage yet. I'm sure you were getting to it, but he was probably the biggest loss we've had in the wrestling community for a long time. He was such an inspiration to so many. He still was an inspiration to being with the Mega Powers back in the 80s with Hulk Hogan and just absolutely dominating the WWE and the WCW. And his title reigns have been kind of overcome at some points. He doesn't get the recognition that he deserves from the wrestling community as far as the WWE Hall of Fame and everything, but he was definitely a casualty as far as just waking up and finding out that Macho Man Randy Savage is no longer with us. So what's your thoughts on his passing?
Awesome. Thanks a lot for the call. You're right. I was getting to Randy Savage here. Since we mentioned him, since you mentioned him, definitely I will mention him as well. I will go further into Randy Savage. Yeah, I died in 2011 of it was actually diagnosed as a coronary artery disease because it's been confirmed that he actually had the attack before the car crash, and it's basically that's what the diagnosis was that it actually caused the car crash. But yeah, I mean, died in 2011. One of the most popular wrestlers of all time, hands down. Randy Savage is the guy. I know that him and Vince had, you know, some problems over the years, let the rumors fly. But at the same time, you know, Randy Savage, you know, no matter what, he's one of the best wrestlers of all time, one of the most larger-than-life gimmicks, one of the most popular wrestlers of wrestling history, not just WWE, but pro wrestling history. And there's no way in the world. I know Lanny Poffo made some mentions about, you know, him or Randy Savage mentioning when he was alive, if he wanted to be in the WWE, had to be a family thing, meaning, you know, Randy Savage's brother, which is Lanny Poffo, and then his dad, which is Angelo Poffo. But, you know, it's really up to the WWE, you know what I mean? And I, you know, no disrespect to Angelo, you know, I don't think that he's a WWE Hall of Famer. And then, you know, I think the genius was good, you know, as a gimmick. Leapy Lanny Poffo wasn't too good as a gimmick, but you know, he's definitely popular. But I don't know. I don't know if Lanny Poffo was Hall of Fame worthy. But at the same time, you've got some people that are kind of shady in there right now, that, you know, that really achieved as much as Lanny Poffo did. No disrespect to Coco Beware, but that's who I'm thinking of right now. I liked Coco Beware all through my childhood, and, you know, I was a big Coco Beware fan. Had a very, very plush pile driver. Even made a song out of it. I was, you know, subjectively, you know, I didn't have a problem with Coco Beware being in the Hall of Fame, but it aroused a bunch of criticism that if Coco Beware is in the Hall of Fame, you know, why isn't Jake Roberts or Rick Rude or British Bulldog or Randy Savage, you know, any of them? So in that sense, if Coco Beware makes it, I guess I can reason with someone who defends the fact that Lanny Poffo should make it. So, but no matter what, Randy Savage should be in the Hall of Fame immediately. Next, we'll go to Lance Cade, really making a name for himself as a tag team wrestler with Trevor Murdoch. And then towards the end of his career, he was actually aligning himself with Chris Jericho. They had a pretty good alliance there. Jericho was mentoring Lance Cade. I believe he was only 29 when he died in 2010. He died of heart failure, so it was really sad to hear that. Chris Canyon died in 2010 from a suicide. You know, there was some talks of him being depressed, and he wanted a similar gimmick to what Orlando Jordan had in TNA, and Jordan was granted it, and Canyon wasn't, but it's sad to really hear things like that. Chris Canyon, no matter what, you know, he was a good wrestler, very innovative, very skilled wrestler. So, you know, whether I agree or disagree with his personal preferences, I definitely think as a wrestler, you know, he deserved to have a stint in TNA. So, and it's sad because, you know, when people become wrestlers, they revolve themselves a lot. Most wrestlers revolve themselves around their gimmick, around their wrestling career, around their wrestling persona. And then when they get another person I'm going to mention, actually, Mike Graham. Well, two people I'm going to mention here as of late. Mike Graham, another suicide death, which is very sobering, very sad to hear that. He was also rejected by TNA. I'm not blaming TNA for anything, you know, I would work for TNA in a heartbeat as a writer or as a commentator or a journalist or anything. But, you know, I guess there it was something in their decision process that didn't permit Chris Kanyon or Mike Graham to be employees. I guess, you know, there was something that they didn't see that didn't fit the product at the time. I mean, you can't blame TNA, but at the same time, you know, Chris Kanyon and Mike Graham, you know, I'm sure in their head they felt the rejection of a denied opportunity or denied proposal, probably maybe as a last straw or next to last straw, and it's sad to see that. So, and then the last death would be Brad Armstrong. And Brad Armstrong, it was really sad to me how this just happened. Brad Armstrong was just, he was one of my favorites. There's no one in the whole wide world that could do that can execute a Russian leg sweep as fluid as Brad Armstrong. He was just, I mean, you talk about your Brad Armstrong Russian leg sweep, and talk about your underrated wrestlers. This guy, I mean, he had like a U.S. title match against Barry Windham on an episode of Clash of Champions, but that's really the furthest push that he got. I mean, he was light heavyweight champion, but towards the end of his career, he was B.A., Brad Armstrong, just not good. I mean, they made him a heel. He got just annihilated by Goldberg. It just didn't work out. So I really wish they would have utilized Brad Armstrong in a better way than the ceiling that they created for him. He was an amazing, amazing wrestler. He was still wrestling in indies as of a year or two ago. And I watched a match with him and George South from the Legendary, one of the wrestlers that competed often in the NWA doing the World Championship Wrestling shows. Not when World Championship Wrestling was a separate entity, but when World Championship Wrestling was a program on NWA television. George South was a notable wrestler at that time, and he has his own promotion, and him and Brad Armstrong wrestled, and it was a pretty good match, and this was about a year or two ago. And so I think that, you know, he still had it. They kind of gave him an opportunity to be an agent for ECW around 2006 or 7 or so. He was actually a commentator for a time or two. I would have liked to see him. I remember the shows that he was commentating on, but I think it would have been a good idea, but to have him be kind of like a Matt Stryker, doing like a minor show. I think that, he was a producer and didn't work out either, but, you know, it was only 51, so it was definitely sad to see him go. That's, you definitely got to pay homage to these people. You know, it's sad and it's sobering to see them go, but you got to pay homage to them. Kudos to all of these. Medical distress is what the cause of death was labeled as for Brad Armstrong. But you got to pay homage to these people. You know, it's sad how some of them went. Everybody goes, but. You know, it's disheartening and it's sad to see people go sometimes the way that they do. But, you know, you have to pay homage to their wrestling careers. You know, they were they were amazing wrestlers and definitely worth just the, 15 minutes or so that I've mentioned them. well worth a lot more time. But unfortunately, to time restraints, we can only talk about them for a second. But definitely kudos to the people that I mentioned. They definitely left an indelible mark in the history of pro wrestling, and it's definitely good to mention them. I'll give them a short silent moment of silence. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us through the podcast and through Blog Talk Radio. Continue to listen to Crave Wrestling every week. Thank you so much for everybody who was in the chat room, all the tweets. Oh, by the way, the last answer is Pitbull number 2. Looks like I stumped some people on that, but thank you so much for listening. Continue to support Crave Wrestling. Tweet at Crave Wrestling for news, opinions, trivia, all that good stuff. Hashtag Crave Wrestling. Either you can tweet Crave Wrestling or you can hashtag Crave Wrestling for tweets to be said on air that are worthy to be said. You know, maybe I'll if time permitting, I can do some notable tweets and say them, you know, time permitting, every week. And then follow Crave Wrestling on Facebook. Like Crave Wrestling on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Check me out on the Bleacher Report. Chris Featherstone, my latest article I just actually wrote today, this evening. Primetime Players Commentary Sparks Backstage Reaction. Check that out. It's got some good reads and good comments on there. Feel free to comment there. So next Tuesday, 347-884-8452 is the number to put in your back pocket for next week. Thank you so much once again. I mean, I cannot thank you enough. I'm so humbled by the reaction and by the success of Pancakes and Power Slam. So continue to push the show. Continue to support Crave Wrestling. Continue to support me on Bleacher Report as a feature columnist. So until next week, thank you once again. Enjoy this week of wrestling, and God bless. Goodbye.